Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. It is my show. Thanks for hanging out with me this afternoon. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. If you'd like to call in, be a part of the program. Now, I was going to move on to the supply chain stuff, and I want to, but my buddy Ryan, who is listening, he sent me this. He sent me the stuff about the trains and then points this out. You know how it's climate change starting all these fires everywhere? It's climate change. Well, a 30-year-old environmental scientist, PhD student in forestry, is charged with arson to wildland for starting the Fawn Fire in California. She may be a serial arsonist. Alexandra Suverneva of Palo Alto is a Caltech grad student, self-described shaman, yoga teacher, and dive master, charged with arson. A 20-year-old Yukiya man was arrested on suspicion of intentionally setting a fire that burned homes and forced hundreds to flee the Mendocino County town of Capella. Last week, Cal Fire investigators determined the bridge fire was arson. The news comes 2 weeks after the fire was sparked in the Auburn State Recreational Area. According to California Fire, officers with the agency have made 103 arson arrests between January 1st and August 31st. Now, this one, the Fawn Fire shaman claims she found a puddle of what she thought was bear urine, tried to boil it. Started a fire to boil it. It was too wet to boil, so she drank it anyway. She sounds a little bit too nuts. And in Australia, it also appears a large number of the fires in Australia that caused that country to burn were arson. So maybe we don't have the climate change problem and the lightning starting the fires. Maybe it is the arsonists starting the fires, and the media is duly playing their part trying to convince people that, oh, climate change, look at all the forest fires, must be climate change, when actually it's the arsonists setting the fires. This comes on the heels of an eco-terrorist writing a book encouraging eco-terrorists to start building pipe bombs and blowing things up to destroy capitalism to save the world. So, food for thought. Now, I do want to talk about the supply chain issues, because these are going to continue to haunt us as we move forward. Things are just kind of insane with the supply chain. I was in the grocery store the other day. There was actually a large empty space where feminine hygiene products, let's just use that term, were. Right next to the condoms, which were in full supply, the feminine hygiene products were largely empty. The sports drinks, I don't know what's going on with the sports drinks, but the grocery stores, I've been to Kroger's, Publix's, and Ingles's, and there have been shortages of Powerade and Gatorade. There were, again, shortages the other day of Heinz ketchup at local grocery stores where I am. I found it, but there was barely any. I noticed that there were shortages the other day for milk for the first time. There have continued to be some meat shortages, and it all varies depending on where you are, which store you shop at. The supply chain shortages are different, but they're there. My wife, God bless her, my wife has gotten on a super healthy kick. She weighs out her food. She goes to the gym. She eats a lot of protein. She's moved from Sprite to Sprite Zero, and the Sprite Zero, I can't find it at the grocery store. I went to Kroger and to Publix, and they were sold out. Now, they was also on sale, but it was gone. My wife has lost about 45, 50 pounds, looking fantastic. I mean, she's always looked fantastic, but nonetheless, you've gotten really, really on this health kick, and it works, but it takes the joy out of food and cooking to have to weigh out everything for me. But nonetheless, I probably should. It worked for her. But I'm having to go grocery store to find stuff because there's so many shortages. The supply chain issues continue to be just insane. And it's not just groceries. In addition to higher prices now than we have seen in the past and the shortages, it's other products as well. And part of it is just rank incompetence, and part of it is a worker shortage. This from the Wall Street Journal. Nike doesn't have enough sneakers to sell for the holidays. Costco Wholesale Corporation is reimposing limits on paper towel purchases. Prices for artificial Christmas trees have jumped 25%. Despite mounting shipping delays and cargo backlogs, the busiest U.S. port complex shuts its gates for hours on most days and remains closed on Sundays. Meanwhile, major ports in Asia and Europe have operated round the clock for years. With the current work schedule, you have two big ports operating at 60 to 70% of their capacity, says Ulf Ostergaard, president of the North American region for German box ship operator Hapag-Lloyd AG. This is a huge operational disadvantage. The American supply chain has so far failed to adapt to the crush of imports as businesses rush to restock pandemic-depleted inventories. Tens of thousands of containers are stuck at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, California, the two West Coast gateways that move more than a quarter of all American imports. More than 60 ships are lined up to dock, with waiting time stretching to 3 weeks. Participants in each link in the U.S. chain, shipping lines, port workers, truckers, warehouse operators, railways, and retailers, blame others for the imbalances and disagree on whether 24/7 operations will help them catch up. All of them are struggling with a worker shortage. The ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach are managed separately and operate 13 private container terminals. Long Beach officials said last week they would try operating 24 hours a day from Monday to Thursday. Gene Soroka, executive director of the larger port of Los Angeles, said his port will step more cautiously, keeping existing hours while waiting for truckers and warehouse operators to extend their hours. It's been nearly impossible to get everyone on the same page towards 24/7 operations, Mr. Soroka said. Truck drivers often don't show up at scheduled appointments to pick up boxes at the inundated container yards to make space for the next load to come in, say shipping and port executives. Truckers blame terminal congestion, saying delays at one appointment can cause them to miss the next, and that shipping lines aren't doing enough to clear out the towers of empty containers, taking up space at the docks. Before any changes this coming week, the longshore routine at the ports involved two shifts, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., 6 p.m. to 3 a.m. An overnight shift to 5 hours is available, but it's up to 50% more expensive and rarely used, say liner and terminal operators who foot the bill. Cargo pickups on Saturday are also rare, being charged a premium shift, and there's no work on Sunday. The International Longshore and Warehouse Union, which represents the dock workers, say its members would work a third shift or on weekends, but the pileup containers must first be fetched out of the ports, so there's space to unload for more ships. You would think that there is a president of the United States who might be interested in this situation and dealing with it. They have a picture, an overhead picture from the Wall Street Journal, showing thousands of containers stacked at the Port of Los Angeles. And no one can agree on working 24/7 to get the backlog done. It's like the pandemic affects everybody except these people. They don't have to play. But meanwhile, what's impacted? Paper shortages are impacted again. Microchips are impacted. Nike can't get enough shoes. You know the other one, bourbon. Now, this one's domestic, not really international, but there's a bourbon shortage in America all of a sudden. I found this at my local liquor store. So my regular go-to bourbon is called Basil Hayden. You can find it at a lot of places, but the store closest to me is out. They had one bottle last week. I got it. He said they were expecting a shipment in on Friday. I went over there. They had one bottle from that shipment. I got it. I'm to blame if you're living in Middle Georgia and can't find it. But it's not just that. It is a lot of the premium brands. They had to cut back because of work. The bourbon's there. It's in the barrels. They just can't get people in to get it into the bottles and ship it. But it's not just them. Again, it's artificial Christmas trees coming from China. There's a backlog of them. They're stuck in containers at the Port of Los Angeles and can't get it. You know, the rubber and plastic that they use in the artificial Christmas trees, if it sits too long and too hot to heat, it starts to smell a little bit. You get a Christmas tree and it smells kind of fishy. It's the plastics and rubbers that they use to make the Christmas trees. So people are getting in these Christmas trees. They're already overinflated, and then they stink. And Nike can't get shoes. And a lot of it is our ports and the unions don't want to collaborate and get along without people paying extraordinarily higher prices to make it happen. Now, there is a movement in part of the Republican Party. J.D. Vance is at the lead of this in Ohio. He wants to bring back robust private sector unions as a Republican. Robust private sector unions, we see like the longshoremen in California, are causing part of the problem we have in this country with delays involving shipping containers and their refusal to unload them and move them and work 24/7. But on top of that, there's the labor shortage. So many people still sitting on the sidelines. A lot of people don't want to do this sort of work. Man, maybe we should round up the 15,000 Haitians at the border and put them to work doing the jobs that Americans won't do at the price they would be paid for. That would be controversial, wouldn't it? Maybe we should pay higher wages. That's what the left wants. The problem with paying higher wages is then the price of the goods goes up. Then the price of the goods goes up, and pretty soon you're priced out of the job market. A lot of restaurants are finding this out around the country. Restaurants continue to go out of business in this country. They raised rates and raised wages and raised prices and priced themselves out of the market. I was talking to a restaurateur the other day who lives up in North Carolina who was telling me that his restaurant is probably about to go under because he raised wages, he raised prices, he cut everything he possibly could to not have to raise prices as much as he wanted to, and he still can't find the workers to show up to run the restaurant, so he's having to reduce the hours. The higher prices are contributing to a decline in people coming into his restaurant, and he's thinking he's going to have to go out of business. His story is not alone. There's a lot of this around the country. And meanwhile, what are the Democrats in Washington fixated on? $5 trillion in spending to fundamentally reorder American society towards a socialist vision of America that most people don't want. The Democrats barely won the House, barely won the Senate, barely won the presidency, and think they have a mandate to fundamentally transform America. It's one reason they're so unpopular right now. And then, of course, there's the border issue. And the Democrats are on defense about the border. The media tried to ignore it as best the media could until they could paint the border agents as the bad guys. And then they had to go down there and look at what was going on, and they're like, holy cow, this really is as bad as Fox News has been saying. They'd been pillorying Fox News for telling you what was going on. Fox News is obsessed with the border. They're not covering anything else, said CNN. And then CNN went down there, and CNN itself is stunned by what's happening at the border. Here's Matt Rivers from CNN.
Yeah, so basically what happened just about a half an hour ago, or when we were doing the live shot in last hour, is there was about 10 immigration officials that kind of formed a line on the riverbank here on the Mexico side, and they were preventing people from coming. Clearly word spread in the camp. Let me get out of the way here, and we can show you. People here in the camp on the Mexico side are clearly scared that they won't be able to get to the U.S. Remember that people were coming here to Mexico because it was just easier to get supplies, water, food. It was less crowded. There was better bathroom facilities. Clearly with the thought, though, that they didn't want to stay in Mexico. So there's been a rush here with a few dozen people over the last, I would say, 20 minutes where people are basically coming from the camp just up the riverbank behind me here down to the water trying to get across. If you'll remember, before there was a rope that was tied across both sides of the river here from the Mexico side over to the U.S. That rope has now been cut. It is now more dangerous for these people to go across. And you can see there are children. These are families. You know, these are not a lot of single people. These are generally families that we're seeing, a lot of them that have small children. And they're making their way across in kind of a last rush.
That was Matt Rivers at CNN. They can't avoid the situation, even at CNN now. At first, it was just Fox News, Fox News, Fox News is obsessed with this. Fox News is covering it. It's not really an issue. It's Fox. Well, now guess what? It turns out it really is a big issue. And the Biden administration did their best to trot out Secretary Mayorkas this weekend, who seems to have done more harm than good for the administration's cause. We'll discuss when we come back. If you are a regular listener of this here program, you know my quest for the perfect mattress. I finally found one after multiple iterations, and Then, of course, you got to get the perfect sheets to go with the mattress. I mean, you need quality sheets. Well, that's why Bull & Branch is right for you. You know, there's a great, great, great company out there. They're highly entrepreneurial, and they make high-quality sheets, the highest quality. It makes the world a better place when you're sleeping under high-quality sheets on a great mattress, and you need Bull & Branch to go with your mattress. They are soft. They've got that weighted feel, but they're also very, very soft. They're very comfortable. You sleep cool, but you also feel like you have something on you. Like, I can't sleep in super light sheets, and the Bull & Branch, they are the perfect purpose balance. My wife loves them. I love them. They're super soft. They're high quality. And you know what? You'll sleep well at night with them. You'll also, you know, for some reason, the Bull & Branch, it's the sheen on them there. You don't get tangled up in the covers at night, which is also great. So I highly recommend Bull & Branch. You can try them worry-free for 30 nights if you don't believe me. You get free shipping and returns. Now, my listeners get 15% off your first set of sheets with promo code ERIC, E-R-I-C-K, at BullandBranch.com. That's Bull & Branch, B-O-L-L, and Branch.com. The promo code is ERIC. Sleep comfortably with Bull & Branch. You won't get tangled up under the covers. They give you a little weight. They're the perfect set of sheets to go with your mattress. Hi there. It is Eric Erickson. I hope your day's going well so far. You know who had a bad day yesterday? Secretary Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security. I mean, let's just begin with Chuck Todd's statement. It's not even a question.
But do we have enough resources down there to deal with the surge that's currently happening? Because we thought this was seasonal. Turned out it's not seasonal this year.
So we have an incredible ability to deploy resources to meet the challenges that we face.
We thought it was seasonal, but it's not seasonal this year. Right. And then he threw the Border Patrol under the bus by saying they were whipping people when it turns out they weren't. And then he had to defend them. And now there are questions of whether or not he has their back.
Can the Border Patrol count on you and President Biden, who has said the people will pay, to come to a determination based on the facts and not based on Twitter outrage?
They sure can. And let me say something about that, Jake, because I've worked very closely with the men and women of U.S. Customs and Border Protection for many years, many, many years. And they are heroic, what they do. And I saw their heroism displayed in Del Rio, Texas, last Monday when I was there on the ground.
Right. And then there was Chris Wallace.
Since Joe Biden took office, there have been more than 1 million encounters with people trying to cross illegally into this country. But the shocking images from Del Rio, Texas this week seem to crystallize how out of control the situation is. Thousands of migrants huddled under a bridge in unspeakable conditions. Border Patrol officers on horseback setting off a firestorm of outrage. At least 10,000 migrants were deported back to Haiti or returned to Mexico. But thousands more are still in this country waiting for their cases to be heard by an immigration judge. All of it raising new questions about President Biden's immigration policy.
Yeah. All sorts of questions about his immigration policy. It's just not working for them. In fact, they don't really have an immigration policy right now. Secretary Mayorkas kind of gave that away with this.
So, Chris, about 3,000 are actually in detention, and we make those detention determinations in the best interest of the American public. Others are in immigration court proceedings. They are monitored by us. We impose conditions upon them, so we keep in touch with them and ensure their appearance in court as the law requires.
But to answer my question directly, of the 17,400 that weren't deported back or didn't return on their own to Mexico, how many of them how many have been released into the U.S.?
They're released on conditions, yes. and approximately, I think it's about 10,000 or so, 12,000.
Have been released?
Yes.
And of the 5,000 that are still in process?
We will make determinations whether they will be returned to Haiti based on our public health and public interest authorities.
So are we talking about a total of 12,000, or could it be even higher?
It could be even higher.
It could be even higher. And by the way, they're not tracking them. They're not, unless they've gone to court first, they're not being tracked. We have no idea where some of these people are now, and that's Joe Biden's policies. When we come back, we're going to shift gears dramatically, talk about anxiety with Eric Reed. If you've been behind the wheel of a high-performance sports car, you realize how much better a car can be. You never want to settle for a regular car again. I feel that way with my X-Chair. From the moment I first sat down in it and I understood how many consider X-Chair to be the finest office chair in the world, can your current office chair give you a massage while you're working? My X-Chair can. And as a guy in radio who sits in this chair for 3 hours a day, plus an additional 3 hours doing show prep, I can tell you it's worth it. It can also heat up. It can cool down. That's what my X-Chair can do. I bet yours can't. It's all the Elevax massage and temperature regulation, exclusively designed and made for X-Chair. Once you feel it, once you realize the difference, you're not going to go back. You're going to want one of these. Try X-Chair yourself, risk-free for 30 days. Once you realize how much better your chair can be, you're never going to go back. I promise, I didn't, and I had a really fancy chair, and then I got my X-Chair. There's no going back. Go to xchaireric.com now with the letter X, chair, E-R-I-C-K.com, for $100 off your order. X-Chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. It's xchaireric.com. Welcome back. It is Eric Erickson Nationwide. The phone number 877-973-7425. I mentioned earlier in the show some data points that have come out that anxiety is on the rise in the United States. And then when it comes to COVID, interestingly enough, it's the people who are vaccinated who express the most anxiety about the future, not the people who are unvaccinated. But it's not just COVID. It's everything. The isolation we have experienced, the suffering, the loss of life, the disconnection from family because of lockdowns and the like, anxiety, suffering, all of it, it's on the rise. And so I read a book. I did, believe it or not. I read a book. It was sent to me, and I have been profoundly impacted by it. It is called Uncommon Trust. I interact with the author on Twitter. We've never actually spoken until now, but I asked if he'd come on. Eric Reed is joining me. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's actually nice to meet you and to get the person and the voice together, not just the Twitter profile.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things where you'll be like my wife and you'll meet me in person and say, I don't know, your face and your voice don't align. I still don't understand that, but my wife says that about people. So now, I want to talk to you about your book, and to set the stage, I mean, I was roped in the first chapter when you were writing about Caleb. And yeah. I want to start there with how you came to recognize anxiety so people realize you actually have lived this life.
Yes, my wife and I found out that our son, our first child, had issues when he was in the womb. We knew there was a mass in his stomach. That mass was later identified as a kidney that was filled with cysts, and it was causing issues with his development and with her pregnancy. He was born premature, 10 weeks early, but after further testing, they discovered, well, we can get this kidney out and life will be normal. You know, your son can live with one kidney and everything will be fine. And after that's out, you know, life will feel normal. He'll never have another issue. So this could all be behind you. And that was a relief as a parent, right? First time parent, thought, oh, great. And 2 months after he was born, they had the surgery, and there was a surgical mistake. And not only did the bad kidney get removed, the good kidney was removed with it.
Gosh.
And that's when our lives were turned upside down. That's when everything changed. We knew at that point life would never be the same. I was so naive. I didn't even understand the full significance at the moment. You know, like, well, kidneys are important, right? But, you know, we've got options, you know, and, yeah. And it was like, no, this is life altering forever. And when the full weight of that reality sunk in, that's when I started to experience anxiety and panic attacks for the first time in my life. Never had anything like that. Up to that point, my life had been normal, no issues. Parents are still married. You know, so I didn't really know any real suffering. I knew about other people's stories, but that stuff happened out there, not with me. And all of that was disrupted with Caleb's kidney mistake and the doctor's surgical mistake. And so that began a process for us. Over the next 2 years, he would need to get a kidney transplant, and he had multiple surgeries to try to get him to that point, and hospitalizations off and on constantly. And that's when we really had to do some work spiritually to really ask the question, what do we believe? What do we believe about God? What do we believe about how to work through pain and sorrow and trials? How do we make sense of our faith and our afflictions? And that's where we were first thrust into that, was through Caleb's health issues.
Gosh, you know, not funny you should say this. I guess I'm connected in that way, because, you know, with my wife's health situation, with an incurable form of cancer, she was given 6 months to live in 2006, and it was a misdiagnosis. And ironically, had they not made the misdiagnosis in 2006, they would have never realized she had lung cancer when they did in 2016, and thankfully they caught it early. But
wow,
you live with the ups and downs and trials and
oh my goodness, yeah,
work stresses and everything else. And oh my gosh, what happens? What do we do? Insurance costs and all of that. And you can wrap yourself into a knot that you yourself cannot then untie, having wrapped yourself into that knot.
Well, and what happens is with the moment we are confronted with the reality that we're not in control. See, that's what happens is when the illusion of control is disintegrated, when it burst open and you begin to realize, no, I don't have control. And what happens to me tomorrow, I don't necessarily control. I can't fix it. I can't manipulate it. That's when we are met with, will we trust God, who the Bible reveals clearly does have control and does have our lives, or will we fret over and worry and despair and live in fear of what we don't control? And that's what I was confronted with. That's where my anxiety stemmed from. I was confronted with the fact that I had a son now who would have medical issues forever. He needed a kidney transplant. I knew kidney transplants didn't last forever, even if he got one. And I knew this would be a perpetual cycle that we would live in. And it started to grip my heart. I started to have panic attacks. I couldn't sleep at night. Everything was being ruled by this fear. And that's when I knew I had to do some real business with God. I really had to get into the Word. I had to walk with some other people. I needed to get some real life under my belt about how can I trust God when I don't have control. And the one I love the most, you know, my son is in this vulnerable position, you know, and there's nothing I can do. And that began that journey for my family and I.
Now, I know that back in 2019, Caleb had other health issues and passed. And how was the anxiety? Did it resolve and resurface, or has the struggle just been there?
So, you know, I talk about in the book, after his kidney surgery went wrong, that's when I really had to start diving into, why do I have this anxiety? What do I need to do to find peace in this? And that led to a 7-year process for me. It was about 7 years of dealing with panic and anxiety attacks before those began to subside. And what happened is what I outlined in the book. I really had to grapple with, what does it mean to trust God? And I started diving into the character of God and studying about the sovereignty of God and the wisdom of God and his plans, but also the personal nature of God's love for his people and his faithfulness and his promises. And it truly is. It's not cliche, because, you know, I think, you know, in church and Christians, we tell people, you know, just trust the Lord, you know, just trust God. And if you don't put some meat behind that, if you don't put some substance behind that, it just becomes an empty platitude. And so I had to get to a point where trust the Lord actually meant something. And so that 7 years of dealing with anxiety and panic attack, I really grappled with, you know, do I trust the Lord? And the only way I can learn to trust him is I've got to lean not on my own understanding, but in all my ways acknowledge him. I got to know him. And so what happened was, is in 2017, when Caleb's health took another turn. So he got a kidney transplant at 2 years old, but then, you know, he was on immune suppressing drugs. You know, his immune system was compromised. He would get sick easily, and he would get things you and I would fight off so quickly. But in 2017, he got fungal meningitis, and that meningitis caused a stroke. He lost his ability to talk and use most of his motor skills. And even though he was still there, and even though we could communicate with him through nonverbal and eye blinks and different things like that, his life and our lives were drastically altered. And I did have a moment at that point. I had been free of anxiety for a couple of years when I was in the ICU, and that that old feeling started to emerge. I knew that feeling. I knew the heart racing and the tightness of chest. And I began to preach the gospel to myself. I began to preach the truth to myself, because what I began to learn years ago was this: the stories we tell ourselves and the things we let pervade our mind and our hearts, they have a profound impact on our emotional response. And so it's not one of those things you can turn on and off like a light switch. Like, I'm going to trust God and it's never going to be an issue again. It's a day by day, moment by moment choice where we have to keep preaching the truth to ourselves and not leaning on our own understanding. And so, yes, it did try to emerge. But I can say that I've not had any anxiety or panic attack in years, but it's not because I've solved the riddle and am forever not going to have to deal with it. I deal with it every day. I deal with it every day proactively by getting my heart in a position where I'm trusting him and not leaning on my own understanding and letting fear grip my life.
Now, for those of you just tuning in, I'm talking to Eric Reed. He has written a book, Uncommon Trust. If you want to order a copy of it, text the word Eric, but spell it my way, not his way, E-R-I-C-K.
Spell it the correct way.
text the word Eric, E-R-I-C-K, to 33777. I'll send you back an Amazon link so you can order it. Now, you write about your personal struggles here, and I've been very open with my audience about mine, and I'm continually perturbed with myself and also somewhat impressed with the way anxiety can sometimes creep in. Things are going well. Suddenly there's a curveball.
That's right.
Family or work. And I find myself waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I can't go back to sleep. All I can do is get down on my knees, start praying. I'm not sure that does good. It stresses me out. It freaks me out. There have been some of those recently. And you meditate on scripture. You talk about you've got to know God. It's not just a matter of believing him. It's a matter of trusting him, and trusting comes with knowing him. I mean, what advice do you give for people like me?
Yeah. So I think, first off, don't beat yourself up with shame and guilt that you struggle with anxiety. We live in a broken, fallen world. We do live in a world where we get bad news. We do live in a world where loved ones are ripped from our hands and taken out of our lives. And that's real. The void is real and the pain is real. And so the first thing is not to think that you're less Christian because you deal with anxiety. The second thing is, I would see not anxiety as something to be cured with some kind of magic, some kind of magic formula. I think it's something we have to take to God daily, and it has to become something we're asking the Lord as an affliction to let him use it to sanctify us. Because here's the reality. My anxiety always pressed me further into dependence on God. Always did. Because I realized in that moment, this is an awful feeling. This is an awful experience. And the only thing I can do is go to the Lord and say, walk with me through this. You're the good shepherd. Walk with me through this. You're the comforter in afflictions. Walk me through this. But the third thing that I had to really work on, and that's the thing I was talking about just a moment ago, is so much of anxiety is rooted in our thought life. Now, there's other factors, right? I mean, if you're not getting enough sleep, if you've got a lot of stress, there's seasons where it's more natural that you're going to be prone to anxiety attacks. If you get a heavy load at work, or if there's family stress going on, it makes sense that that's going to happen. So I would make sure you're trying to eat as well as you can and exercise. But at the end of the day, I think directing your thought life back to these core truths: God is sovereign over my life. He is wise in his plans and good in his plans for me. He loves me. So none of his plans that are coming from his power and from his wisdom are detached from his love for me. And he's faithful. If he allows for me to go into this, he'll sustain me through it. And that was always the approach I had, is that God gives me anxiety for the rest of my life, and I have to deal with panic attacks the rest of my life. I'm going to depend on him. I'm going to lean on him. I'm going to walk with him. And he's faithful to keep me. He says so. And so much of that is learning to direct our hearts and our minds to those truths. And that doesn't magically make it all go away, but it is what I have found that will give you comfort in those times.
Again, folks, if you want to order Eric's book, text the word Eric, E-R-I-C-K, to 33777. Last question before I let you go here. I know that I have a ton of people who listen who are in ministry, particularly for a pastor who might be listening, who's dealing with people in his congregation. What advice do you give to pastors about how they can help their congregants who are struggling with anxiety, or the pastor himself?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, one of the reasons why I wrote the book is because I pastor a church, and I have opportunities outside of my church to preach and to speak. And I've come across so many people who are not equipped with a theology of suffering. And so I would just say this. I think it's imperative that your listeners, whether they are pastors, ministers, just solid Christians who want to be used of God to help others, or maybe they're people looking for a church. Here's what I would say. We've got to be taught a theology of suffering. We need to understand the Bible doesn't promise Christians glassy sea as long as we just put our faith in the Lord. The Bible doesn't tell us that if we just, you know, put our faith in Christ, then everything's going to be cupcakes and rainbows. That's just not reality. Jesus says there will be troubles. There will be afflictions. There's going to be fires. And so what I would say is, one, teach your people that God is able to rescue, deliver, he can heal, right? He can do anything because he's God. But the second thing is we need to prepare people for when the Lord leads us into afflictions. When he decides that he's going to purify us with fire, we've got to have a theology that doesn't collapse when trials come. That's why I think the health, wealth, prosperity gospel, it just collapses under the reality of real life. Pain comes, struggles come. So we got to do that. And we have to teach people that the best thing that can happen out of anxiety is not that we get out from underneath it, but that we learn to press closer into the Lord and in relationship with him through it. And because that's ultimately, he desires that. He desires that we would draw nearer to him in our pain and our suffering. So the greatest blessing of anxiety might be that it makes you so much more dependent on him that you draw closer than you ever have before. So I think we got to teach people about those things, because everybody is going to go through trials, everybody. And so everybody is prone to go under anxiety and stress and despair when those afflictions come.
Eric Reed, the book is Uncommon Trust. Man, I'm so glad to finally talk to you in person, and I just can't tell you how much this book has helped me in the last few weeks as I've read through it. I really appreciate you stopping by.
Hey, I'm honored to be here, and I'm super thankful for your voice, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Eric Reed, pastor in Lebanon, Tennessee, and also he is with Knowing Jesus Ministries. His book is Uncommon Trust. Highly, highly recommend it. You get to, it's a short book, by the way. I should tell you, it is right at 100 pages. It is a quick read, and it is just a powerful, powerful, impactful read. Text the word Eric, E-R-I-C-K, to 33777 if you want a copy. I may need to get a little Bible study together and go through this book. He's got little questions at the end if you're doing a Bible study that help tremendously. Solid guy, great book. Now, I want to tell you about a great company that shares your Christian conservative values. It's Patriot Mobile. Patriot Mobile wants you to be a customer, and with you, they want to help rebuild a better America in a conservative vision by giving a portion of their profits to pro-life causes, Second Amendment causes, conservative causes. It's what the left's been doing, and the right finally caught on, and Patriot Mobile is a step ahead of everybody in doing this. You can roll over your cell phone number to them. You can get a new phone number from them, and they have great coverage. They actually use the towers the other companies use, so you don't have to worry about your coverage. If you don't believe me, go to patriotmobile.com. You can see their coverage map. It's fantastic. Down to 5G and data across the country. And their rates are fantastic. They give discounts to first responders, large families with multiple lines. NRA members, I found out from someone who signed up with Patriot Mobile. Go to patriotmobile.com/Eric today, patriotmobile.com/ERICK, or call them, U.S.-based customer service, 972-PATRIOT, 972-PATRIOT. Tell them Eric sent you. You get free activation by using my name. Hi there, it is Eric Erickson here. You should know that the Democrats have sent a very sternly worded letter to Mitch McConnell insisting that Mitch McConnell go along with a debt ceiling increase. I'm sure now that that's going to get him like quaking in his boots, and he's going to do it. I'm sure that's the that's just the path to get him to go along with a big debt ceiling increase. This letter is just a little bit silly. On three occasions over the past 4 years, the previous president and Republican Senate in which you served as majority leader asked Democrats to do the responsible thing for the American people and vote to suspend the debt limit. Every signatory to this letter did so at least once, setting aside the temptation to extract political pain. We agreed with your assessment in 2017, 2018, and 2019 that the consequences of an action would be, as you said, a debt limit crisis that could put our full faith and credit at risk. Holding this debt limit hostage, as you and 45 of your Republican Senate colleagues have said you will do, is a dangerous, illogical, and irresponsible way to express concern. Whatever you think about the policy agenda that the current administration and the Democratic majorities in Congress are pursuing, we know you agree that it would be dangerous malpractice to allow our economy to be unnecessarily crippled by political uncertainty. Yeah, I'm sure that's going to get McConnell to go along with them. Right. Man, these people have put McConnell in charge.